This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Patrick Button, assistant professor of economics at Tulane University. Recently in the Wall Street Journal, there was an article about a study that was done, an economic study that was done. It said that the U.S. economy is really being powered by the richest or the top 10% of wage earners in America today. And I often wonder, you know, this is the outcome, the what. I often wonder about the why, and I also wonder about what does this tell us about our economy? And hopefully Patrick Button can help us with that. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So, you know, they're saying that the top 10% of wage earners account for about almost half of all spending in this country, that the bottom 80% of earners spent 25% more than they did 4 years ago, but that barely outpaced price increases at 21% over that period. But the top 10% spent 58% more. What does this indicate about our economy?
Right. It's sort of a symptom of our increasing income inequality. So the United States, compared to a lot of other countries, is more unequal in terms of how income is distributed. So if you compare us to all the what we call OECD countries, you can think of those as like developed nations. Out of those 34, U.S. is number four in terms of being most equal. The only countries that beat us would be Chile, Mexico, and Turkey. So the income is really, really sort of spread out, where it's more concentrated among wealthier families. That's a trend we've seen kind of growing over time. So, for example, in 1968, the highest 20% of earning families, they represented 43% of the total income in the U.S. And that rose from 43% to 52% in 2018. So over that roughly 50-year period, there was a pretty significant increase in income inequality. And we're seeing that especially since COVID as well. So this has been a longer trend. So this trend is exactly being reflected what we're seeing now, which is that the top 10% of earners are half of consumer spending.
So, okay, that's the what. Let's talk about the why. Why do we find ourselves in this position today?
I think there's a couple of reasons. So some of the recent events with COVID-19, for example, have really affected consumer confidence. So we saw a particularly big drop in that. And so that's one of the things that is going to reduce consumer spending, especially for, you know, typical working families. They're, if they don't have confidence in the economy, things are tight, they're not going to spend a lot of money. And then with the pandemic, with recent events, people have sort of reduce a lot of their savings. So they had a lot of savings, you know, rainy day fund that has been spent. And so savings are at an all-time low right now. And so families are sort of reluctant to spend a lot right now because they need to build up those savings. You know, they need to replenish their rainy day fund. So that's sort of a short-term thing going on. Over the longer term, we have just seen, especially with different economic policies, that has led to more income inequality. So, for example, certain tax breaks have differentially reduced taxes for those at higher income brackets. Other policies have done sort of the same thing. So there's just been sort of a gradual thing that sort of happened over time.
I often talk about this show, the manner in which you're paid really makes a difference here. So when you think about W-2 employees, there's no really exotic tax scheme for them, you know, tax avoidance. Whereas if you have an LLC or some other kind of structure that you set up, you're able to avail yourselves of being able to avert income taxes in so many different ways. The vast majority of people that work in this country are W-2 employees, though, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So is that a contributor to this? I mean, you know, a lot of folks, when they reduce their tax burden, they're able to, they have more disposable income. They actually can take advantage of investing in the market or otherwise. They're able to be in a position to take a little bit more risk than others. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely those who earn higher incomes and earn, you know, incomes from different sources, whether that be taxes, businesses, they do have more ability to kind of get their tax loopholes. That's why we're seeing some of this inequality, absolutely. But for most people, when they get their taxes cut, yeah, that does allow them to spend more and allow them to invest more and, you know, increase consumer spending. But we're seeing that a lot of these tax cuts and whatnot are going to those very, very high up. Who are, you know, in the example of the Wall Street Journal article, you know, spending a lot of money on these sort of luxury goods. And that's what's really driving up consumer spending. So that now that they have this share of 50% of consumer spending, despite being only 10% of earners.
Yeah, you can treat yourself to something that you didn't ordinarily think was going to be within your reach, right? You know, I mean, I've had that experience myself where I was like, well, you know, I've got a few dollars. I can go get that really nice custom bike that I always wanted. Bicycle, that is, not motorcycle. My wife still won't have me, but that's a different conversation. But, you know, you can get some of those things where others live in paycheck to paycheck.
Right, absolutely, yeah, and we're talking about consumer spending being really driven by these not like splurges that I think the average family would necessarily, you know, want. Like, I think, you know, those sort of things are important, but we're talking about the consumer spending category driving the most is things like, you know, yachts and designer clothing and things like that. So, and that's just a symptom of the sort of income inequality that we're experiencing, which has been really exacerbated since COVID-19.
We know that this is not healthy for our economy, though, right? Because if you have a downturn in our economy and you have such a concentrated group of folks that have such an inordinate impact on the economy, you can go south really quick with the way that this is structured. Would that be right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, poverty rates are higher when we have more inequality. And then when there is an economic downturn, those families are even more differentially affected. And since we're seeing right now that people don't have a lot of personal savings, they spent a lot of that to get through COVID. You know, if the economy does go south, which it will eventually, those families, you know, don't have savings, don't have a rainy day fund, they are going to be even more affected. So poverty rates are really going to increase. And so the effect of, you know, income inequality really is related to poverty. And that's the biggest issue here, I think.
So how do we turn this around? I mean, I hear that a lot, this term income inequality. I mean, I come from my parents never made a lot of money. They were both educated, but never made a lot of money. You know, I started working when I was 10 with a job. I mean, and have worked throughout my entire career. How do we change this?
Right. I mean, there's a lot of factors that are going to go into this. So, you know, on one side of things, I think we might want to avoid, you know, providing tax breaks that differentially affect the top 1% or 10% of earners. I think, you know, given the government doesn't have a lot of money, there's a lot of things we can spend money on. Maybe having those tax cuts differentially affect the super wealthy, not the best idea. We could talk about other things that will try to sort of boost incomes for people, like more access to education, even things like better infrastructure. That's something that creates more business growth, right?
Yeah, let me stop you there, though. There's a healthy percentage of people in this country that pay no income taxes, correct?
Not a lot of people, but yeah.
But there's not. So where I struggle in trying to figure this out is, what would the tax policy be that would make sense to begin to turn this around somehow? Because
right, so when we think,
you know,
of
those in poverty, right, aren't paying taxes, so that, you know, that's not going to help for them.
Well, not paying much taxes. Yeah. Right, right. Well, in terms of, so obviously taxes are not good for the economy, right? Every tax has a cost, right? So as economists like to think about what are the tax, what's a package of taxes that's going to have the least distortionary effect on the economy? And what we've found is that income tax, especially progressive income taxes, where higher percentage tax rates are paid by those with higher incomes, the progressive system is one that has less of the economic damage to the economy, is also going to raise more money, and it's also going to reduce some of this income inequality as well. When we see proposals of efficiently raising tax revenue, it's also going to exacerbate income inequality as well.
We are always told, though, that those dollars are reinvested, they create more jobs, they lead to expansionary growth of the economy. And I don't want to use the word trickle down, but that used to be the term that was used.
I almost was about to.
And we have seen some successes in that regard, but I guess the breadth and depth of it before it's all said and done is it's not enough.
Right. And I think, certainly if you give more money to people that have higher incomes, they are going to spend it. Although if you compare giving that money directly to, say, working families, they're directly investing in their communities. They're buying things at the grocery store. They have like big needs that they're going to spend that money on. And a lot of that money is going to be more likely to stay in the United States compared to someone with a higher amount of income who's more likely to import goods. So I think the targeting of sort of the trickle is a little bit better when we focus on the middle class.
Yeah, because, part of the issue, too, is that, we look at a number of these science projects that have gone on in California here recently with raising the minimum wage. What we find is they've lost tens, if not hundreds of thousands of jobs over the last 18 months as a result thereof, where people are paring down those costs because they can't afford it. Small business can't afford it. Medium-sized businesses are struggling to do so. So you see your employment numbers go in the opposite direction as opposed to what you would hope and it would lead to.
Yeah, minimum wage is another issue where that's not the best way to try to reduce poverty. It's a very blunt instrument, and there hasn't really mixed evidence as to what extent minimum wage reduces jobs or not, but it's a very blunt instrument. And so usually when we think about, poverty and poverty reduction, that's better done through the tax system. So, for example, there's the earned income tax credit, which actually encourages families to work more so they can also get some government income to supplement their work income, and that's been shown to significantly decrease poverty. And so usually working within the tax system and, taxing lower income families less and progressively taxing higher earners more, that is something that is sort of more efficient and helps reduce poverty as well, compared to things like minimum wage. I'm not necessarily saying that minimum wage is bad, but it's a very blunt instrument in terms of poverty reduction, which is sort of what you're hinting at. And the literature seems to back that up.
Yeah, I've seen what went on in France, right? They very much increase the rate for the wealthy. Well, they're pretty nimble, and they can move wherever they want for the most part. And that's exactly what they did. They went right across the border into Belgium, and because they were not willing to pay 65% of their income to the government. And so I often wonder, what is that sweet spot where people are comfortable in paying? I've had many people tell me it's right there at that 39%. And the moment that you get closer and closer to half, people are unhappy. They'll move their money other places and move themselves other places.
Right. Well, people that are very, very high incomes, they are definitely offshoring their wealth and whatnot. And that's going to be happening regardless of what the tax rate is. In terms of, Europe, people can move around a little bit more. So people are a little more sensitive to taxation there. In the U.S., it's kind of harder to leave the country to escape different levels of taxation. So generally, there isn't as much of an efficiency loss from increasing tax rates on the super wealthy in the U.S. case.
Yeah. What would you have you ever thought about a sweet spot number?
I don't know what that would be. I mean, I would have to crunch a lot of numbers, read a lot of papers to give you the specifics. But I think what we've generally seen from economists is that a more progressive income tax system than we have right now would raise significantly more government revenue with fewer distortionary effects and would also help with income inequality. So something that's significantly better than what we have now, but I can't give you a firm number. So I think we are moving in the wrong direction with some of the tax policies being proposed right now, and we need to move towards reducing tax rates on middle and lower income families and then increasing tax rates for income tax on high earners. And that's going to be more efficient.
So, Patrick, that's your assignment before our next interview, okay?
I will run the numbers, absolutely. You know I love that.
No doubt about it. So thank you so much for joining us, Patrick Button, Assistant Professor of Economics at Tulane University. Have a great Mardi Gras.
You too. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.